Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
I called you Shireen.
I didn't even notice. Today is a guest slash bonus episode of Ethnically Ambiguous. We have one of my personal heroes in studio with us today. Her name is Abby Martin. She's an incredible journalist, filmmaker, documentarian, and we talk about her upbringing and her path into journalism and her film right now that's being screened, Gaza Fights for Freedom.
Yeah, and at one point you'll hear Shireen call Condoleezza Rice Gondoleezza Rice.
You just did it.
Think I said condo, but I meant to. Yeah,
is she okay. A boat? I don't know. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
We're going to do that.
We just talked about Anna versus Anna, but today it's Anna. Hi, Anna.
Hi, I am Anna.
What if I change it up over and over again?
Well, I'm Anna. It's been like 150 episodes of this podcast, and you've been saying Anna every time.
Have I? I blacked it all out. My boss in college at the cafe I worked at, the Coho, he called me Anna. Because he just was like, what do you prefer? And I was like, I really don't care. And he'd be like, all right, Anna. And then that was my name, Anna.
Anna.
Yeah. And the one time he was like, Anna, get your head out of your ass.
Honestly, because it's a really pretty name.
I wasn't paying attention.
Anna. Yeah.
All right, I'm Anna now.
Well, today is a bonus episode of Ethnically Ambiguous. That means we have a guest in our studio. You guys.
Shireen, keep it together.
This
is Shireen's dream guest.
It really is. And I'm especially proud of myself because a former guest of the show, Lloyd Galbraith. He was the one that kind of gave me the courage to like cold email this person. And I literally just found her email. I emailed her out of the blue being like, please do our show. Also, I love you. but I did. And she's here. And she's an incredible journalist, documentarian, filmmaker, and a voice that I think is so important. It's Abby Martin.
Hello. Yay. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor to be on.
I just have admired you from afar for so long. The fact that you're in the studio means a lot to me. I want to have a disclaimer. The last time I had a white woman on the show, I got some flack. And you know what? I think Abby's work voids out any type of, especially because we're going to be talking about your film, Gaza Fights for Freedom. And I know the majority of our guests, if not all of them, have been people of color and women and everything. But I think Abby's work, especially this Palestinian amazing film that she hired Palestinian cinematographers and people to help her bring this vision to life, I think that is more important to me than any fucking flack I'll get for having a white woman on the show.
Curious, was it because they liked Lena Dunham or something?
I feel like I vaguely remember.
Did you have Lena Dunham on the show?
We had Lena Dunham. She had a lot of white feminism thoughts. We were like,
just before she was famous.
That's like the best when you don't want to be an asshole, so you just roll with it. You're like, okay.
No, but the only other white woman was Caitlin Stassi or Stacey. And
but she's Australian.
But she was Australian and very tan.
That's how we don't know.
No, I'm kidding. No, I brought her on because of her work as a feminist. And I was like, you're cool. And people gave me flack for it.
Well, there's people, you know, women of color are very sensitive about white feminism.
Yeah.
Because you just feel like there's so many blind spots that you're like, wow, okay, you're really going to say that on air? Like, so I feel like we just get so... You know, I understand why you would get flack for that, but like, you know, whatever. It's one person who's on the show.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But
we can have hot takes on this show.
Right.
Hot takes. Hot take being a white guest again. Yeah, <I know>. But we've had white men on. Lloyd is white. He's Mormon.
Yeah, I guess. But that wasn't a bonus episode where we were interviewing him. He was just hanging out on the show.
That's a good point.
Because I was like, oh, are you in the neighborhood? Just come sit in the room and like...
That's a good point. Whatever. Anyway, hi, Lloyd. I love you a lot. Thank you for being the reason why I still am here. So before we get into the film, it's an incredible film. If you guys want to look it up, I'm going to be plugging it in the whole time, but it's GazaFightsForFreedom.com. It's on Vimeo, video on demand. It's
also having screenings.
Yeah, we'll link it in our footnotes. And it's also having screenings nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Abby were talking about making another screening in LA, hopefully soon. But until that happens, you should definitely watch it. It's a hard watch, but necessary watch. Anyways, I want to talk to Abby a little bit about her life and how her upbringing and her background led her to make this film. So let's start with that. Where are you from?
I'm from the Bay Area. Grew up in a semi-politically conscious area because it's kind of just overly saturated with, you know, kind of the remnants of the 60s and 70s. But then again, it kind of becomes harder to sift through that and people are kind of like, oh, I've heard it all before. But I never really was political. I grew up, you know, unaware largely, just grew up in a kind of a staunchly Democratic family. I remember my grandparents and my parents were just very like pro-Clinton. So I actually had kind of like bad kind of tenets of the Clinton type of Democrat that you would expect, like pro-death penalty, right? Like, mm-hmm. Well, who the hell, how did that work? So I it took a while to kind of understand, you know, my privilege and like my role in the world. And I think it just all kind of happened. 9/11 was really the catalyst and the radicalizing event for me when I was a senior in high school to kind of just understand what the fuck is going on. Why did this happen? Going to college, being a senior, or I'm sorry, a freshman in college and just taking sociology classes. I remember reading Chalmers Johnson book Blowback. And just this one chapter on Okinawa was absolutely terrifying and mind-blowing about what the U.S. military had done to completely ravage this small Japanese island with like dozens of military bases. And I was just like, okay, if this is happening there, what the hell is going on across the world with the U.S. military? This is devastating. So it just kind of all catapulted from there. And then all of a sudden, one day, the media just started talking about Iraq as if Saddam had bombed this country. And I was so confused. And everyone around me, and mind you, San Diego State is the biggest, like, it's the most militarized campus. San Diego in general has 5 military bases.
Yeah.
The most militarized city.
I went to high school and middle school in San Diego.
Oh my gosh, you did. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's like, it's so
very strange, right?
It's very disturbing, especially because I grew up mostly in San Diego. My parents moved around a lot, but we settled in San Diego when I was like in second grade. And going back and forth from LA to SD is so strange because it's very red. It's a very red city.
Yeah.
And you forget that because you're in California.
But the lifted trucks.
Dude, that's how I know.
I'm like,
the second you leave LA, all of a sudden you see the lifted trunks with like crazy, fascist iconography. You're like, oh my God, what is going on?
But you wouldn't expect that because you're like, this is California.
And it's like a beach town.
Like a beach town. So it's like people not giving a shit about anything. Yeah. They're like, oh, like, why are you talking about politics? Or people just being like, we like kill them all. And you're like, oh my God, what is happening? How
it's
is
like,
this
half of
real?
It's like bro-y surfer bros.
Right.
And the other side is like their parents.
Right.
So right. Like, oh.
It was totally bizarre. But I mean, back then I was so anti-Bush and I was so kind of like blinded by my hatred of the Bush administration. Of course, he's a crazed war criminal that I actually, embarrassingly enough, campaigned for John Kerry. Mm-hmm. Don't fault me. I was really kind of naive.
I think we were all kind of like,
we were trying.
What do I do? Right. And then I saw Nancy Pelosi blocking impeachment back then. She was saying impeachment's off the table for George W. Bush. And I was like, what is going on? Why is this happening? And then the media, of course, kind of playing their role in catapulting these narratives of war. So it took me a while to kind of understand and get on that political evolution to realize it's not just the Republicans, it's not just the Democrats, it's actually like a systemic thing that includes the media facilitating kind of U.S. imperialism and fostering it. So then I just started my own media organization and started just putting myself out there in an uncomfortable way and kind of trying to lift up the community around me and tell the stories of people who I felt like weren't being heard.
You were doing that when you were still in college?
Yeah.
What were you studying when you were in college? What did you go in with it? What degree?
Political science with a minor in Spanish, and I lost it all. I don't
remember. That's not true!
Like five,
I saw a documentary where you were speaking Spanish. You were great.
It's like a five-year-old level of Spanish, so I'm like a baby still, but so that's a long story short, and then moved back to Oakland. Occupy Oakland kind of popped off in my backyard, mm-hmm. and I was like, why is there a police state here in Oakland? Like, what is going on? And then RT found me and my work there covering Occupy Oakland, and then, you know, the rest is history going on RT and whatnot.
Yeah. Your work on the Empire Files, when did that start, and how did it become what it was eventually? Like,
so Russia Today, it's not... you know, it's definitely changed since I left 5 years ago. But when I started, I really did have complete editorial freedom there. I had my own show called Breaking the Set, and it was a media critique show that I had 5 days a week. Really incredible. It's not the top-down Putin propaganda network that people depict it as. And it's kind of cartoonishly conflated with a lot of things. But when you realize, you know, why is RT demonized when BBC, France 24, and kind of the allies of whatever the U.S. government are not demonized, and they're all state media, and you look at corporate media that's subsidized by weapons contractors, banks, and oil companies, and then you're like, okay, what's really going on here? And that includes NPR and PBS and stuff like that. So it really is just kind of understanding and being media literate to get where RT fits and why it fills a void and why it's popular. But back then, it actually did kind of lift up voices of the left and the right. And the problem is now that they just kind of lift up voices of the right. And they're kind of embodying this kind of cartoonish thing under the Trump administration and purging a lot of leftists. So I was there. I left kind of, I think, at a good time before all of this weeping hysteria about anti-Russia fervor. So I joined Telesur, a conglomerate of Latin American countries from the global south, actually started by Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro to kind of counteract that corporate media hegemony that was working to overthrow countries in Latin America and undermine their sovereignty. And I worked with selling the content to them. So people are like, oh, you're a Russian puppet. You're a Venezuelan puppet. I was like, I literally just sold a show to Telesur. Like, I could have uploaded things talking shit about Hugo Chavez and like no one would have like been over my shoulder being like, don't do this. Literally just uploaded on the YouTube channel. So that worked out for a couple of years. But then Trump's devastating sanctions on Venezuela, which we know have taken the lives of several tens of thousands of people just since 2017, shut down the ability for Telesur to pay independent contractors. So we had to sever ties with them about a year and a half ago and go fully grassroots independent, which has been an enormous struggle to just kind of lobby for donations for the work. And I would, you know, I've never charged anyone for my content and I don't want to charge people for my media content. And so we've never, and until Gaza Fights for Freedom, and I think when people see it, they'll know why we had to. So everything's ad-free. There's no subscription for any of our Empire Files content. And so for the last year and a half, we've been kind of doling out as much as we could for that, covering how Trump is actually expanding the U.S. empire. He paints himself as a an anti-interventionist. And there's been a lot of pass and a lot of kind of like people giving him a free ride that I find really troublesome because he's a horrible war criminal who's been ravaging the Middle East, doubling, if not tripling, drone strikes and civilian casualties. So we've been trying to cover that angle.
Yeah. I recently watched as much as a struggle it is financially, I'm sure, the fact that the majority of the Empire Files is accessible online for free is so amazing because there's so much information in each episode. I don't know if this was an episode of the Empire Files because it was like an hour long, but it was, I think it was like a documentary. It was like on this documentary website and it was a about maybe three, almost 4 years ago. It was about Chevron versus the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And you did an amazing job encapsulating just what the oil industry has done to like ravage the Amazonian forest and Ecuador in particular. And it's eerie because I watched it recently and it's just as important as it is today as it was back then. And something I really admired about you is that you're talking to the people like on the ground, like you're in the soil, like your hands are covered in oil and you're like, you get dirty and you talk to them in Spanish, which you're not that bad at. but I really admired you for its tireless work.
Mm-hmm.
And does that ever affect you? Like the amount of effort that you guys put into these, to each series, to each episode, to see these people struggling and to try to uplift them. And it's very emotional. People are like really devastated and suffering from cancers and everything because of the U.S. and because of oil industries. But does that work ever feel enough? Like,
and I'll try to say this without crying, because Rosa Moreno, who I interviewed for that episode, actually did pass away a couple months after. And her dying words were basically like, Chevron needs to be held accountable for what they did here. Yeah, I mean, it's horrifying and it's traumatic, but it's like, I have such extraordinary privilege as being an American. I'm like, I can't not do this. And I don't even consider it work. I consider it just my life. And I live and breathe the work. And so every day it's just day in and day out, trying to do everything that I possibly can to tell these stories and to amplify the voices of people who are not being amplified on mainstream media. Because goddamn, the violence that's externalized by the U.S. empire and kind of this absent-mindedness and willful blindness from American citizens is absolutely heinous.
Yeah.
And I have to use my privilege the way that I do. And I just wish that other people did, because it's devastating when you look at what this country is doing around the world.
Yeah.
Sorry to be so depressed.
No, don't be like, depressing. I think you articulated
the facts.
That.
No,
you articulated that really well.
How long does it take you from like coming up with the idea to literally like uploading it to do like each episode?
Well, Shereen and I was talking before this started about like, what is the process of doing it? And it's like so many kindlings in the fire, right? So I have like a million projects, a million scripts going, like a million ideas. And yeah, it's just like, it's so hard to actually complete something. And so we had this whole like Trump expanding the empire series. We wanted to go into every single country and talk about what the lies are and all this stuff. And it's just like, we got derailed. And then the Venezuela coup thing happened. We got derailed. And so it's really tough. But I would say that when we were doing the Telesur stuff, it was awful because it was every week. And I'm such a perfectionist and I'm so OCD that I would never be satisfied with it. And if there was one tiny error, I'd be like, it's fucking ruined. That's it. Like, yeah, we're screwed.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then it's just up forever. It's living forever with this little error.
Yeah.
But now it's like, because I have the time to work on it, I can spend way too much time on it. My partner's just like, we need to finish this.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just like spend 3 months on a 10-minute thing. But I think that it's kind of counterintuitive to where media is in general. Like, media today is just like, you know, constant hot takes, and you just kind of put things up online in terms of video. And so we're kind of going the backwards route, which is not conducive to like actually profiting and making money, which is another thing we were talking about. And so we try to put a lot of care, a lot of production value, graphic elements and stuff like that, just because I want these stories to live on forever and not just be kind of a fleeting thing that's off in the 24-hour news cycle. Like, I want them to be an educational tool that you can use for years to come and reference for years to come.
Honestly, that's what I use them for. Like, even like a couple of days ago, I rewatched the one about, it's a 30-minute episode about the oil industry in the U.S. in particular, and it goes back to like the Rockefellers and like the hold they've had on, and the hold that the fact that the Rockefellers were billionaires in like the 1920s when like the income was like $500 something or something. It's just absurd how monstrous the oil industry is in this country. And then you see it, there's like clues and modern day media, like Condoleezza Rice, or Condoleezza Rice being like leaving her job at, what was it? Where did she leave? She left from,
I mean, she had like her name on oil tanker
yes,
or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Like,
oh, that.
Like, or even like Rex Tillerson. Like,
right, right.
Leaving ex. I think Condoleezza Rice left.
You calling her Gondoleezza?
We might as well.
Gondoleezza. Sorry, Gondoleezza. I keep thinking of Italy and the gondolas.
Gondoleezza.
No, but like, the reason why I bring that up is like, there's clues in modern day media, like being like, oh, Rex Tillerson used to be right. like an oil person Hashtag and now right. he's oil a boy. Politician. Or like there's clues in our day to day that we kind of just like ignore. Or no, and it's rooted in so much history and it's so disturbing. But I do think the Empire Files being online, like if people want that information, it's out there. The only thing is that they have to want it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I'll put the episode I'm talking about and the one about the Amazon in our footnotes because they're very, very good. I really recommend you guys watch them. Because even though they're maybe like 2 or 3 years old, they're just as relevant, mm-hmm. if not more so. Because in the episode, you talk about how the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, at the time, she was like one of their biggest donors was Chevron. But now it's just as bad. Like now it's just like, oh, you watch that and you're like Rex Tillerson, or like right. it's still going right. on now.
Yeah,
it's still
going on. Yeah,
Clintons
yeah, yeah.
are a fascinating yeah. horror story. I don't yeah. know what is going on with that. I really wish that's like my biggest thing was I really wanted Clinton, like Bill, to be outed in that like mm-hmm. Epstein mm-hmm. stuff. Because I was like, mm-hmm. guys, like we have got right? to stop putting these Clintons because they are like Hillary. I voted for Hillary because I was, you know, I'm an Iranian-American woman. I was like, at yeah. this point, I just need not Trump. Like, yeah. I have yeah. to put my heart into this so I don't, you know, like literally like a few months later, like my own family could. I was in Iran. I was scared I couldn't come back into this country because the travel ban yeah. was happening. So I was like, oh, does it even matter that I'm a U.S. citizen? But like, really, it's like the Clintons, man. Like, that's such a pivotal like moment in history that we've all kind of been like, what about them? But it's like right. they are yeah. behind a lot of evil. Like just because you're a Democrat, because like I was raised in the Bay. I lived in my own like mm-hmm. little bubble mm-hmm. of like Iranian American parents who were like really giving into this kind of like very calm, relaxed, like Berkeley lifestyle where they're like, guys, everything's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. my mom's like, meditate. And I'm like, yeah, OK. But like it was. You don't realize, like, I grew up being like the Clintons, and yep. then you know, I got to college and I was like, wait, Hillary is whoa, wait a yep. second, like, are we killing Yemeni children with drones? And that was like, you know, a really big thing where I was like, Obama's great, but we are killing kids, and yeah. we're all just being like, yeah, well, at least he's not Bush. And it's like, yeah. now it's like we have Trump, we're like, man, remember Bush? And it's yep. like, they're all criminals, like, yeah. they're all criminals.
It's like then, we it's like
just
we have
screaming
to
into the void at this point.
No. I mean, the Bill Clinton yeah. thing's important because he literally flew on the Lolita Express more than any yeah. other
flew
person.
On the Lolita
Jeffrey Epstein
Express.
Had a portrait yeah. of Bill Clinton in that blue dress. Is. Like, how insane is that? There was also Woody Allen, a portrait of Woody
of
Allen in Jeffrey Epstein's house.
Oh, well, I mean,
course.
Yeah, just his two besties. Just his two besties.
God. That
legendary men.
Surprise, surprise.
Oh, God.
The audacity of old white men, I swear to God.
Right.
Yeah, I'll take a quick
second
break
on that note.
Let's go on the Lolita Express. Just kidding.
All aboard.
Yeah, all aboard. We're eating lollipops. Okay, bye. Be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Okay, we're back with Abby Martin. She just revealed to us a fucking game changer of a revelation.
As I'm profusely sweating here, I had to share that Bruce Lee, one of the greatest fighters in the world, rest in peace, died because he took the sweat glands out of his armpits, removed them, and so I guess his body couldn't process the heat and just dropped dead.
How do you remove sweat glands?
But like, it's also like your shirt was off all the time. It's like, what were you?
But also like, isn't it a good thing to be like, I'm working hard?
Right,
I'm,
like I'm you're glistening, like this is part and parcel of like the whole fighting thing.
That seems like a tough surgery.
Yeah, it does seem like a tough surgery. Plastic surgery has gone too far.
Right. Like the calf implants, the sweat removal glands. Wow. It's like, let's just stop, please.
Wow.
It explains a lot in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, he's completely dry.
How was that? How was that?
Oh,
well,
a
the
snore.
Bruce Lee part, yeah, it was so boring.
It was just so overrated.
You know what, guys? Yeah. I'm going to have a hot take. I don't care.
No.
It's so boring.
It was so boring.
Okay, let's move it along. Are we going to kill anyone? What are we doing here? Get to the point. Okay, this Bruce Lee shit's racist. All right. So that's where we're at.
Yasser Lester posted this image on Instagram that I really related to, but it was just a pair of white or yellow socks and the words at the top were written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. And his caption was just, "This is worse than a MAGA hat to me." And yeah. I was like, you know what? He's not wrong. I agree. Oh, God.
He needs to leave more on the cutting room floor, I think. But like, he's just surrounded by people being like, yes, this is amazing. Yeah. Don't cut any of it.
He's drinking his own Kool-Aid, you know? He's like, yes, I can do anything and put so many bare feet on a windshield and still be lauded as a fucking genius.
And then say the N-word and we're like,
oh,
okay.
God, I can't. I seriously can't. And the Hateful Eight, it was just like, how many times can you just like call someone a bitch and whatever?
I don't know. Anyway.
And punch a woman in the face.
I know. Everything comes out. It's like, so you really want to do that, huh?
Yeah. It's like, that's your ultimate view, right?
That's your brand now.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good.
Before we recorded, you mentioned a little bit about, we were talking about filmmaking, mm-hmm. and I mentioned having like feeling like a little bit of survivor's guilt or just like shame about being like the American cousin in my family trying to make a film about being Syrian and how kind of exploitative that would feel. And you brought up how people have criticized you being a white woman talking mm-hmm. about marginalized people, even though I think that's, in my opinion, you embody the ideal kind of ally, because ally is a word that's kind of like tossed around a lot. And I think a true ally is someone like you who acknowledges your privilege as a white person, as a white woman that has a platform. But you use that platform and you use your voice to draw attention and lift up those that are ignored and that are truly invisible, like Palestinians or like Venezuelans or mm-hmm. people in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. So how do you manage that criticism, and was there ever a point that it made you falter?
It's interesting because I never got the criticism until the film came out from actually some Palestinians, some academics and stuff. And so it hurt, but also it emboldened me because, as I said, I've never charged for any content. And so the charge to me came from, you're profiting off of Palestinian suffering. I do understand the idea of that, and I have to say that you haven't seen the film because it's not about me. It's not about me at all. You know, it's not about making money. How dare you say that? This is literally about telling these stories and literally using my privilege to amplify the voices of people who cannot be here, who made the movie. If you watch the movie, you see I'm not in it. I'm literally just bridging together different narratives that the Palestinians have provided. But it's a tough one because, of course, you can't escape that. And I do understand the criticism. I'm white, grew up middle class. But then again, it goes back to like, I'm doing everything that I can to use my privilege for the right reasons and to understand and accept that privilege and like take the criticism and try to explain, this is what I'm doing with the privilege. So it's difficult, but then again, it kind of comes with the territory whenever you're charging for something. Right now, we do have the movie behind a really small Vimeo paywall while we're taking it on this nationwide tour before we make it more widely available online, which we will. And we're working with Means TV, an anti-capitalist platform, to actually stream it for free. So it is going to be going that route. But I mean, anyone who knows and understands this issue knows that you can't get funding for it. It is really like a third rail. I actually spoke to an agent in LA who was just like, yeah, the film's awesome. He was like, no one's going to touch it.
Yeah.
You can't get this shit on Netflix. Mm-mm. If you're going to put it on Amazon Prime, you're going to pay $10,000. It's going to be buried in a sea of content. And so we had no choice. Like, of course I don't want to charge people to watch this film. Of course it should be free. I didn't have a choice because I'm so in debt with making it and because we paid everyone in Gaza Hollywood wages. People in Gaza are used to being paid Gaza wages. Yeah. We paid them a fuckload of money because they deserve it and they risk their goddamn lives every week getting this footage. And it is really, really mind-blowing stuff. And, you know, Ozma, Tia Hamad, and Waz Mwaza, the two videographers who put you in the march, they are heroes. And the fact that they can't be here and the fact that we actually had to redact our co-producer's name, who we were on the phone with every day for a year, directing all these interviews, producing all this work, because he said, I might not ever be able to leave.
Wow.
I might be punished if my name is attached to this film.
Holy
and
shit.
And that is really shows you the stakes of the fact that I'm lifted up as the filmmaker and this person who did almost just as much work is literally like can't put his name on it. Really just speaks volumes about the situation. It really shows you that Israel is just like a mafia.
Yeah.
And they will do anything to punish people for speaking out about this. So it's just it's horrifying. But yeah, I mean, the film speaks for itself, I think. And it was different than any other work that I've done because it's about them. It's not about me.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, that sucks because Israel runs all that shit.
Right.
Ugh!
I know.
And it really is. When I watched it, I really was so impressed and also horrified by the cinematography because you really are right there in the march. Also, for those of you that aren't familiar with the film, it's about the Great March of Return in Palestine, Gazans in particular. They've been marching every Friday since March 30th, 2018.
NEPCA?
NEPCA. Mm-hmm. And it's a peaceful, unarmed march. And every week, essentially, Israeli snipers have been killing and targeting innocent people. And I think the cinematography is so incredible and horrifying. I say horrifying because you see it happen in front of you. Mm-hmm. You see someone standing there and just getting shot in the head. Like, mm-hmm. it's those cinematographers, everyone there is risking everything
mm-hmm.
just for the right to protest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a film that is so necessary, but the difficulty making it is unfathomable. It's crazy. And I really appreciate it, even though this was probably the hardest part for me to watch, I really appreciate that you gave a moment for a lot of the victims, whether it was like this person was just sitting on a cell phone mm-hmm. 300 meters away from the fence, shot in the head. This person was wrapped in a flag
mm-hmm.
so far away from the fence, shot in the torso. Like, it's very telling of the way the Israeli military works because they're targeting medics, journalists, children, the disabled. It's not the narrative that we're shown in the U.S.
Right. Right. And I wanted to tack on something to what I previously said is that I Skyped in with Palestinian journalists in Gaza when the Great March of Return started and when Razan al-Najjar was murdered in cold blood. And I was so horrified by the way the U.S. media was depicting this. I mean, as you saw in the mm-hmm. film, it's just absolutely atrocious. After she was killed, the IDF released a propaganda video basically depicting her as a human right. shield. She gave mm-hmm. up her life for Hamas. And
yeah.
Da,
that's
da, da.
What they always do.
Yeah, and yeah. I remember Barry Weiss on Bill Maher saying, they planned this, didn't mm-hmm. they? They really planned this. Hamas planned this so then we could see a split screen with Ivanka Trump looking like she's at a country club and poor, desperate people dying in Gaza. They planned this also. And it's like, yeah, they planned their own massacre. I remember the front page of the New York Times the day after 60 people were mowed down in cold blood. The front page of the New York Times said, Israelis reflect. I hope every bullet was justified. So I did the Skype session with Gaza journalists who were asking me, what is the coverage like? Are they saying anything differently? I was unfortunately telling them, no, it's actually just as bad. And they asked me, can I do an Empire Files episode about the Great March? So back to the privilege thing, it's like I literally was asked because of my privilege and because of my platform to do this story. And when we saw the footage from them after we directed all the interviews, I was so blown away. I was like, we can't just do an Empire Files episode. I mean, we had to do a movie. But back to your point about the march, we hear constantly that Palestinians are not only armed, because of course rocks, I guess, are arms, right? but it's not even people throwing rocks, which is not a weapon at all. It's just a symbolic gesture that hasn't affected
a deadly weapon.
They haven't killed any or maimed or harmed any Israeli soldiers.
I did like that you said four or three Israeli soldiers said they had been scratched.
That's very serious.
Yeah, it's like, very serious.
That's disgusting to me that they even have to mention that.
Right.
Like, no fatalities on their side, but I got a scratch. Yeah. Like, fuck off.
Yep. Yeah, when you see the Hasbro propaganda of just, like, flaming kites, and they're like, well, they're trying to burn down our like, fields. It's like, I don't fucking care, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how does any of this justify what's going on?
There's a moment in the film where there's footage from the Israeli side. It's so disgusting. Mm-hmm. These Israeli soldiers are talking to each other about the kid they're about to kill, being like, that kid is in blue, that kid's in pink, which one am I getting? It's like, no, I'll get this one, you get that one. They shoot the kid, and then they are proud, they're so proud of themselves, being like, I got the kid, you see how he fell? He flew in the air, oh my God. How did you get that footage? It is so
shockingly enough,
telling.
They posted it on their social media.
Yeah, I remember, I vaguely remember they were bragging about.
Yep, they bragged about it, which really reveals kind of the racist roots of just settler colonialism in general. Like, you have to, I mean, they honestly are acting like it's target practice. And that just comes with the territory of a racist kind of fascistic society that's based on the ongoing ethnic cleansing of, like, the indigenous population.
But I mean, why isn't that in the media?
Yeah, right.
Like, that is literally public.
Right. Because Israel.
It is disgusting.
We can't do anything with Israel in power. Like, it's like a weird... I mean, it's, I don't know. It's like the never ending, like, umbrella of, like down to, like, even, like, I mean, like, Ilhan Omar being like, that's so funny, AIPAC. And everyone being like, oh, she's coming for the Jews.
Wow.
And you're like, what? Like, that's just look at the paper. Like, it's there. Like, the facts are there. And they're like, well, good for you, anti-Semite. And you're like, okay, if you took money from AIPAC, then you're taking money from Israel. So, like, why is that anti-Semitic? That's just a fact.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you done did it now. You're a racist against Jewish folk. And you're like, that none of this makes sense.
Right.
Like, you
can't
do anything.
Yeah.
Until we, like, I don't know. I mean, who knows? Like, it's not, you know, we got to wait for Jared Kushner's brilliant plan that he's got.
Prosperity plan. Just, like, putting corporations in Gaza.
Yeah.
It's just...
Can't wait.
Just feeling good. And, like, you see, there's this narrative, especially because, you know, the United States is just best buddies with Israel, but there's this whole narrative that I find repulsive of how beautiful Israel is. Like, birthright is this very propaganda trip for every Jewish person to be like, this is my spiritual home. When on the other side, there's literally footage and it's a known thing where people just sit on a hill and watch rockets get thrown into Gaza. Like, what's it called?
Something. Sterot cinema.
Yeah, sterot cinema. Like, what?
Yeah, a Guardian reporter back during 2014 when 2,200 Palestinians were massacred, 500 children were murdered with these bombs relentlessly being dropped on a caged population. And there was the Sterot cinema was going on. They were there cheering on the bombing every night, drinking beer and eating popcorn. And a Guardian journalist went to report on it, and she was spit on. She was called a leftist pig. Leftist is a slur in Israel. Let's face it. I mean, this is, you are in danger if you are openly, like, pro-Palestinian. And she was chased off the hillside.
Wow.
And when she reported it, she was actually removed from her post.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is a situation. I mean, I am not joking when it's y'all know it's a third rail issue and people just don't want to report it. And that's why I'm so unabashed, because I don't care.
Yeah.
And I don't have a job to lose. Like, this is it's absolutely inhumane and heinous what's going on, and for the media to actually pretend like Israel's a democracy when 5 million Palestinians are either living in, under a medieval siege or under brutal martial law is laughable. It's absolutely laughable. There's no hope from within Israeli society. It's just getting more fascistic as time goes on, and that's why BDS is so crucial.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just realized, why are we allowed to talk about it?
We're not. We just do. No, no one gave us. We just talk about it.
Huh. Oh, well, I guess so.
I mean, like,
I've never really shut down yet.
I mean, that's something that I really.
Well, I mean, actually had a theory that if we went to Israel and tried to do anything, we would probably get in some trouble.
Yeah, I don't think they would let us do that.
I don't think iHeartRadio's like, yeah, no, I mean, hey, you know, whatever you want to do.
I mean, that is something.
First of all, y'all would be like held for 2 days at the airport, no, maybe not even let in at all.
I have an Iranian passport. I have no chance.
Oh, no.
I have a Syrian passport.
Oh, no.
I'm going to get turned away.
Oh, no.
I asked my mom and dad the other day being like, do I still have a Syrian citizenship? She's like, yeah, you always will. And I'm like,
it's
oh,
for
cool.
Life.
I'll just be this way forever.
Yeah.
That's why I really commend your work, is because you unabashedly tell the truth, and not everyone does that for fear of decreased popularity or people coming after you or whatever. But that's not what journalism should be about. You know, it shouldn't be about like being likable or like complete. I don't know. It's just.
Well, journalist's job is not to be objective. It's to tell the people what's really going on.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of mask of objectivity that you get hammered in if you go to J school and whatever. You're just told that you need to tell both sides of the story, right? Mm-hmm. And let people decide for themselves. Well, there's no both sidesing this issue. It's and that's why Empire Files, we look at the world through the lens of colonialism, through the lens of how U.S. empire has shaped the regions of the world. And it's not both sidesing it. It's either who's the oppressed and who's the oppressor, who is the colonized and who's the colonizer. And Israel-Palestine is just such a stark example of this.
Yeah.
And so it's actually really bizarre that people are so confused. Because it's just so obvious.
Yeah.
People like, I mean, I get people all the time just being like, they've been fighting over there for thousands of years. There's mm-hmm. no solution to the conflict.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, that's not true at all.
Yeah. Also, Israel became a state less than a century ago.
Right. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really fascinating. But that's what media indoctrination does. I mean, we are a heavily brainwashed society. We are empire babies.
It's like Winston Churchill mind, and I have never said that before, but it always makes me think of, I was watching Peaky Blinders and Winston Churchill appears in the show, and all I could think was like, wow, like because of you, like
because of
no
you,
one's really allowed to acknowledge that. It's like, well, why are we so worried about these Palestinians? You're just poor Arabs. And it's like, yeah, that's the problem. Like we're acting as if like, well, why are we so worried?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like Mexicans in this country are like, well, what's the big deal? Like who cares if we kick them out and or murder them?
Yeah.
It's
well,
like,
that's the common thread you see with
what do you mean?
Unbelievable.
It's the common thread that I saw in the Chevron versus the Amazon documentary you did and in Gaza Fights for Freedom. It's just how there's a group of people that are dehumanized to the point where they're just seen as not even human. They're not even a lesser human. They're just not human.
Mm-hmm.
They're disposable. They're target practice. They're like, it's appalling. And someone in the Amazon documentary just said it outright, being like, this is just racism against darker skinned humans. You know what I mean?
I believe
right.
colonialism is in the Wikipedia definition of Zionism, which I'm like, well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We shouldn't accept a racist ideology that we're like, well, it's fine, you know.
Well, that's the
right.
thing. That's the thing that, again, like people have been brainwashed to believe is that being anti-Israel is being anti-Semitic or being anti-Zionist is also being anti-Semitic. But when you watch the film, when you watch any real footage from Palestine, from Gaza, it is so incredibly telling. The people that are suffering for no just reason. Not that there should be a just reason for suffering, but like it is completely unbalanced. It is just someone wrote about the film in Mint Press,
mm-hmm.
I think. Just the headline said, it humanizes the world's largest concentration camp.
Mm.
And putting it in those words
mm-hmm.
is so unsettling, but also very true because Gazans are gassed every day, every Friday. The gas makes them unconscious, and it's lethal gas. They're sniped at every day, every Friday. If not every day, they're just discriminated against and not able to leave this again, like a cage.
No water,
no
electricity.
It's
no healthcare.
It's just disgusting,
and
the blockade too.
Right,
we're not even touching on like the economic side effects of Israel literally refusing any construction materials into Gaza. So everything that's destroyed is unable to be reconstructed. They're sitting in rubble. Mm-hmm. Food is limited based on the minimum caloric intake that you need to not starve to death.
Yep.
It's just, what? How is this not addressed?
Right, you know? Right. Because of the dehumanization. Yeah. Like you said, I mean, everyone's Hamas. Everyone's a Hamas target.
That's the problem. When they go, right? Like, all those people we shot at who were running at us with no weapons, it turns out they were all Hamas. It's like, keyword or phrase, no weapons. Mm-hmm. Right. So why were you shooting at them?
Yeah.
And also the organizer of the Great March, he's just a 34-year-old poet named Ahmed Abu Artema. He's a brilliant man. And he basically manifested the whole march just as a symbolic action. They wanted to recreate the Nakba and just set up tents at this kind of, and it's a misnomer to call it a border. It's just a militarized fence partitioning them from the lands that they were ethnically cleansed from 70 years ago. But he just wanted to recreate that to draw attention to the struggle that they were still refugees.
Yeah.
And to show the international community, look, we're still in this state. So that's what makes it even more heinous, is when you realize they weren't charging into Israel. Like you said, I mean, there's so many instances, dozens and dozens of people who have been sniped in the head or torso, clearly murdered, who were literally just holding a flag, standing there on a cell phone, filming. And then, of course, the medics, press, children and disabled people, who are all protected categories under the Geneva Convention, that if it were an actual army and a battle, let's say Hamas militants were shooting at Israeli soldiers, which, by the way, is protected actions under the UNGA 1978 UN resolution that actually deems that legitimate resistance. So let's get that out of the way. That's not what's happening. Hamas has nothing to do with this. We looked at dozens of hours of these footage of the march. I didn't see one militant. I didn't see one weapon. It was literally just a bunch of kids, all stripes of Palestinian life, going out there as a family event. Standing there with bared chests, facing a fortified military, hiding like cowards on these dirt mounds behind this partition with a broad view of the demonstrations, just picking people off. And that's, some international war correspondent described the scene and compared it to like actual war zones in Yemen and Syria and stuff. And she was like, I've never seen anything like this. Every 10 minutes, a shot will ring out and someone else will go down. And it's like, it's just still and kind of like this eerie stillness. And then just someone will get sniped and then everyone will bring the body out. And it's just this stream of bloodied bodies being carried out, who are, by the way, being shot with exploding bullets.
Yeah.
Another violation of international law. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. And it just goes on and on and on. But the fact that you just flip the narrative and it shows you the racist colonial nature of this. Flip the narrative. Like, let's say Palestinians were just sniping Israeli civilians dead.
We would not hear the end of it.
Medics.
No.
Press?
A nuke would be thrown. Are you kidding
right?
me?
Like, right.
But the thing is, like, okay, so violations of international law, I feel like Israel is just at the top of that list, whether it's the explosive bullets, the gas, the targeting of those four protected categories of children, journalists, medics, and disabled. But the violations of all these international laws, I don't think Israel cares at this point. It doesn't get reprimanded. So what is the point of these international laws if they're just moot?
That's why it's so important to mobilize against the U.S. government, because the U.S. has veto power at the U.N. And even though the world is turning against Israel, like, for example, I still can't comprehend the fact that 60 Palestinians were shot dead with sniper rifles and the world was just like, okay. You know, at least in the UN, when Nikki Haley was going around being like, actually, Hamas did this to themselves. And everyone was like, no, we're not going to vote for this crazy resolution. What are you talking about? And that was actually a turning point, because before then, people, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag. But at that point, everyone was like, no, we're not going to do this anymore. But again, the U.S. has veto power. And as long as the U.S. is protecting Israel, we're not going to get any movement on the international stage. And that's why mobilizing an actual anti-war movement to combat the war machine is so crucial here, because the U.S. will continue to subsidize this colonial entity, use it as a battering ram, and fund it with tens of millions of dollars. I mean, $10 million every single day to basically subsidize this rogue apartheid state.
Well, I have a thought. So you know how it's when you said Nikki Haley, it reminded me when she was like, look at these weapons or whatever the missile thingies that I don't know what anything is called. Look, they're clearly from Iran. How come like we never be like, well, most of the weapons used in the Middle East are also from the U.S.
Right.
Yeah.
So
But that's not what
they're coming from. Any, like, yeah, it might be from Iran, yeah. But Iran is just selling him to the highest bidder at this point, being like, hey, you want this? Okay, give us money. Who cares? We have no economy left because of these sanctions. But then it's like, we're doing the exact same thing, and you don't see Nikki Haley being like, well, oops, that's from the U.S. I don't know.
They choose what the facts they, or the quote unquote facts they want to share. You know,
it's
what
like
I
half
mean?
Those Yemeni kids were killed by weapons we constructed.
Yeah, the Lockheed Martin bomb dropped on that Yemeni school bus. I mean, that's an excellent point, Anna, because let's get that out of the way, that with all these mass shootings here and this kind of bizarre trend of violence going on in America, how does that manifest? I mean, with living in the world's largest empire that actually is the world's largest arms dealer.
Yeah.
I mean, how can we talk about gun violence if we don't actually address the fact that we're selling weapons to 70% of the world's dictatorships? Yeah. Not only selling them weapons, but training them.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense.
Again, externalizing our violence while maintaining our privilege and not understanding how these things connect, how the refugee crisis connects, how immigration connects to our upheaval of Latin America with all the bloody coups in the last 50 years. I mean, how do all these things sort itself out? And, you know, of course, Republicans will just punch down and right-wingers will just punch down at the oppressed victims of our policies. And it's just so important to connect what's going on to the policies of the U.S.
Yeah.
That's wild. We forgot. Do we
have
a second
break? Break.
I'll try to think of another fun fact about Bruce Lee.
Here, sweat some more. No. Okay, we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back.
Real quick, I also had a thought.
Yeah.
I feel like someone has to tell Israel how insurgents are created.
Right.
Like, you do realize there would be no Hamas had you not ruined the lives of the Palestinians. Like, you
but
do
it's
realize
also,
people come out and be like, I'm going to fuck shit up because I feel pressured and cornered and I have nothing to live for. So why the fuck not?
We've talked about this on the podcast before that, like, extremists are usually created out of desperation. Like, there's no other choice. And then you choose the only choice that you see viable. And also in the film that I really appreciate, you actually define what Hamas is now. And it's not this idea of crazy bomb-wearing children that we see in the media. It's actually like Hamas agrees with a two-state solution. It's Israel that rejects it. Israel, Netanyahu repeatedly says that he will never see a Palestinian state come to pass. So it's like the Western media just pushes this idea of Hamas, of extremist Arabs, of children at the fence being used as shields, And then in reality, Hamas is not exactly, I'm not going to say they're progressive, but they're not as extremist as we're led to believe.
They're still in the Middle East, which is like,
they're still Arabs.
Yeah. I mean, two things is that human shield means you're literally a militant using a human being in front of you. It's like that is literally not happening. And the fact that that human shield mantra continues to be used to conflate all Palestinians as terrorists is shocking.
Yeah.
Going back to 1954 after the Nakba and the expulsion of, you know, several million Palestinians from their villages, there was this prevention of infiltration law that was passed that basically had a shoot to kill order for any Palestinian refugees trying to return. You would just shoot them on site. They laid mines in the routes of return. They called them infiltrators, and that, you know, the prevention of infiltration law. So this was a policy in place from the origin of the State of Israel. And then, you know, they were brutally occupying Gaza. They wanted to take all of Gaza. We know that Israel has plans to take a lot more. That's why they're in Lebanon and Syria today. So they wanted to take all of Gaza. They were militarily occupying it, but there was militant resistance against that. And so when they left Gaza in 2006, we know from WikiLeaks cables that that Israel actually worked to implement Hamas's reign in Gaza. So then they could declare Gaza hostile territory and then therefore subsequently just bomb them relentlessly and you know, routinely massacre them under this pretense.
That's kind of the same thing that's been done over and over. Like the fact that they, like, not only, I mean, it's, you can suspect that they want Hamas in power so they can have a reason to be like, every child, every person, every woman is a Hamas operative. But to have that literally proof is just so telling and so disgusting. But we see it also in the U.S. too, being like, oh, look, Al-Qaeda is in this one country. Let's just bomb the whole thing. It's like, we need we need a reason to go somewhere and destroy it.
Yeah, and how do we think terrorism is created? I don't agree with Tulsi Gabbard's depiction of radical Islamic terrorism as being like this. No, I
we're out here about our anti-Tulsi agenda.
Yeah. No, like straight up, like this whole mantra of like, this is like the root of all evil. No, how do these things manifest? Obviously, terrorism is created by, like Noam Chomsky said, if you don't want terrorism, stop creating it.
Yeah.
Stop perpetuating it. We are the world's largest terrorist operation. We just have like a sophisticated machinery to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you call drone bombing eight countries, you know, on a daily basis? I mean, that is terrorism. And calling every military age male, you know, in the vicinity of a strike zone a militant.
Yeah.
And there's just no data collection on how many civilians we're really killing. I mean, just the other day, 30 Afghan like farmers were just massacred in a bomb. And there was just, you know, it was a headline for a day.
It's
like, how many more extremists are, if I grew up and my mom was blown apart by a fucking drone, I'd be like, who did this?
Yeah. And they'd be like, whoa, extremist.
But that's the thing. That's what I'm saying about how extremist acts are usually from a place of desperation, a place of loneliness, a place of complete
isolation
and utter desperation. And like, there's no other option that you see viable. Like, what do you have to live for example, again, like your family is torn to shreds. What do you have left?
And also you look at actually, people have said this. I mean, Osama bin Laden, the 93 World Trade Center, the guy who bombed the World Trade Center in 93, they all like articulate why they're doing this. And it's always because of U.S. foreign policy, like very clearly. So it's like, maybe we should listen to why the terrorists are actually committing acts. And then maybe we should stop doing it instead of actually creating much more terrorism. There's been studies done. Terrorism has gone up like 5,000, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but like an enormous percentage since this so-called war on terror has initiated. So maybe we should stop and ask ourselves, is that a good idea to actually wage a global war on terror, squander all of our money, and then that just actually has created vast amounts of terrorism around the world?
And then have the audacity to turn around and be like, act like big brother and be like, we're going to save this nation and have a
and
democracy.
How they painted Osama, it drives me crazy because he was a rich kid whose father was fucking the loaded dude in the Middle East. And he was just like, you know what? I don't care for this. So I'm going to fuck some shit up. And everyone's like, poor Arab guy. He's so mad. And it's like, no, dude.
Village man.
His dad literally had the sole contract to do any renovations on Mecca. That's
He
that's
was a rich
a
kid.
Bomb ass gig. Like, that's all the Saudi money in your pocket.
Yeah.
And you're like, look at these little poor Arabs.
Yeah.
They're so mad. You're like, fuck you.
Yeah, Bin Laden family. That's
now look at half the white terrorists in this fucking country. They all come from, for the most part, like decent. Like they're, everyone's like, I didn't know. Seemed like a nice kid. And you're like, yeah, well, maybe fucking pay attention and stop selling guns to any average Joe on the street. I don't know how to describe
average
people.
Average Joe on the street.
Any coffee drinking
Osama
Joe.
In the desert.
Yeah, no, well, we sold them those weapons. Let's be real.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God. Right.
Yeah,
we shipped them to
Saudi Arabia today.
Cave 240. Yeah. And, I don't know. I always remember them being like, yeah, we found them in a cave. And it's like, yeah, right. Okay. It's like, that's all we do in the Middle East.
We're bombing ISIS caves. Like, yeah. What?
I mean,
like,
I mean, like, what? They live in caves. We don't have homes. Right, right.
But that's the media. Seriously, people think that when I go to Syria, they're just like, oh, I'm just going to be on a camel in the desert for the next couple of weeks. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know what we do.
I'm going to stay at that Airbnb cave.
Yeah. Like, literally. Like the same people that are like, actually, your dad has blue eyes and you're this light skin.
I had an extra cave, so I decided to Airbnb it. So I was like, you know what?
Just make some money.
Income property.
Yeah. It's called financial stability.
Cave culture. The whole cave thing, it drives me fucking crazy. Yeah.
But that word mm-hmm. can affect an entire like Midwestern town's idea of what an Arab is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's just how deceptive and disgusting media is, because they use those words to make us just seem savage.
Mm-hmm.
And it works
when it's like, right. Well, he did. He was, you know, he drove a Rolls Royce.
But that's not mentioned. You know?
He drove, because you have to paint them
Rolls
in that
Royce
certain...
the name of his camel?
Yeah. Yes. He had a little tiny Rolls Royce that he would sit on and like, no, but that's how we're painted. We're painted as like straight up cave folk. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's especially disgusting, not to bring it too real, but when it comes to Gazans and Palestinians, the film is incredible in just, you talked to families in particular. Like you follow this one man in the beginning who used to be a farmer, is not able to be a farmer anymore because everything, like they kind of, what's the word? The lack of water and the lack of supplies has made a lot of jobs obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change?
Yeah. And Israeli blockades. But you see how this family is living, and it's not just a family that's been living like that, like in rubble for like a year or two. This is generations of refugees. It's generations and decades of refugees that have been living in squalor. And for whatever reason, they still have hope and strength. And there are so many quotes that are just like one of the young men you interviewed said, they're purposely targeting the youth so they have no one left to fight for. Like the Palestinians have no one left to fight for. And then what leader of Israel said, like, they purposely wanted to target, or not target, but like when the orchards wither mm-hmm. and dry, mm-hmm. maybe they'll give up or something. Like I'm
Levi Eshkol. Yeah. He said perhaps if we don't give them enough water, they won't have a choice because the orchards will yellow and wither. So this was something that was a policy that's been in place for so long.
It's not just hearsay. It's like proven fact. Mm-hmm. Israeli leadership is just like murdering these people.
Yeah, and then they say that they're doing it to themselves. Like, who else? That's why it's just so shocking, especially in a post 9/11 world. And let's not even talk about the fact that Palestinians were actually blamed initially for 9/11. There was right wing ideologues on TV basically saying, let's invade Gaza.
Wow.
Yep, let's do it. And then just the constant conflation with Al Qaeda and just global terrorism with Palestinians, which is like a colonized, oppressed people who are simply just fighting for freedom. It's shocking to actually twist the narrative around and say, no, you're doing this to themselves. You're committing self-genocide. And that is not laughed out of the room. Really, I can't wrap my mind around
like,
it. I really can't.
It's like that, well, those Palestinians were wearing short skirts. They were asking for
right,
it.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, what?
That's just as absurd as that word. But that's
But
that word, self-genocide, is a word that is just accepted.
Yeah.
Like, how can you say that a people is doing is that is just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and one other thing that the film talks about is not only that Hamas is actually logical in its aims. There is no anti-Semitism in the Hamas charter. They reject anti-Semitism. They actually say this is a fight against Zionism, which is the position of progressive Jewish organizations worldwide. They also talk about the two-state solution that they want, which actually Bernie Sanders has articulated that's what he would do, remove settlements to the 1967 borders. So, yeah, I mean, when we talk about Hamas, we have to understand this isn't the cartoonish depiction of Hamas that the mainstream media paints it to be, but also that it's not a monolithic entity. Mm-hmm. There's various political factions in Gaza. There's the PFLP, the Communist Party, that is very, very strong. There's Fatah. There's organizations that are actually more conservative than Hamas. So it's a mosaic. It's not that the Hamas was elected and everyone's just marching behind Hamas as like human shields to this board. I mean, it's just so absurd.
Yeah.
But no one sees what it's like. And so you just hear the rhetoric, and it's either Fox News saying absurdly outlandish things, or it's people like Bill Maher.
Oh my God, Bill Maher can go fuck off forever. I loathe that reptile.
So Islamophobic, it's not even funny.
He's disgusting.
Yeah. But that's the liberals.
Yeah.
You know, it's still like okay, because he's a so-called liberal, and
it makes me furious, because the fact that he is a self-proclaimed liberal that has those views, it makes those views acceptable,
right.
And it makes those views seem progressive when really they are just hateful.
Yep.
And that's the most dangerous kind of person to be on television as a liberal person. Like, it just it infuriates me. It makes my blood boil that he's allowed to be on TV.
It's like Sam Harris. It's like the intellectual cover for your bigotry.
Exactly.
So you could be like, oh no, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the Sam Harris argument that Islam's the worst.
Yeah.
We have good intentions.
It's like, no, but I hate all religions. It's like, no,
specifically
you
specifically
fucking
Islam.
Yeah.
You're like, why do you hammer so much? I mean, Sam Harris's book, the first chapter is like talking about how Gaza is a death cult and they all worship death. And it's like, really? Like, have you been to a funeral in Palestine? Like, what are you talking about, bro? Good God.
They're all a bunch of like goths dancing. Like goth dancing gifts at funerals. But you're like, yeah, that's what Palestine is.
That's
like.
What Sam Harris is like, oh my God, yeah.
He's like, yeah.
I'm gonna write
a
book
this.
About this. Yeah. He like sees one meme, he's like, okay.
Yeah.
This is my research.
Oh God. And notes is just a picture of a meme.
Yeah. .jpg. Yeah. God.
Just like, oh boy. But that's like, actually, I say, should go read the Jewish Currents review of Barry Weiss's new book,
How
to Fight Anti-Semitism,
because
they put her to task and they're literally like, the fuck are you talking
really?
About, Barry? Yeah, they actually reviewed it like, yeah, you are off base with this one, honey. Well, I mean,
that's
she's
great.
Off base with everything, but
yeah.
Oh, boy.
But that's
great
thing,
that they're calling her out.
Like, the thing that I appreciate about, you also mentioned this just now, is the Hamas charter. They have the stance of like progressive Jewish organizations. It's like we always shout out this one
Jewish Voice for Peace.
Mm-hmm. This one outlet, Jewish Voices for Peace, is like one of the progressive outlets that like are against Zionism. They are against the Israeli policies of being completely racist against Palestinians. But I think that's why I really admire like people like Bernie Sanders and these outlets that are like proud Jewish outlets, but like also like intelligent and can see the truth. And again, to bring it back to like BDS, it's so important. And I always like shout out the celebrities that like bring up BDS and like whether it's Natalie Portman or like Lorde not having a concert there or whatever, like those little things help to make Israel less appealing and to maybe shed the appeal that it has in this youth generation or the older generation, this whatever mystical thing it has, because it's not what it is. And that's why BDS is so important. It's just kind of trying to like shed those disgusting outer shells that are just fake. And because entertainment and like whether it's like, I talked about this on the podcast before, but Netflix kind of like herald a lot of Israeli powered shows, and which is fine, but conflating Israel with like great entertainment or great music or whatever, it's you're deflecting from like a lot of other heinous crimes. I think it's like Israel is propagandizing itself into this amazing entertainment value tourist attraction, when really it's just covering up every other thing it's doing.
Well, but I always say, if you ever want a bodyguard, you have to get an ex-Mossad agent, because they will do whatever it takes to protect you.
Yeah,
I mean, whatever it takes.
Yeah, they are out of their minds. But, you know, that's what I always told Trina. I was like, if we ever need bodyguards, because this podcast, we have to go with ex-Mossad, because they will, I can't even stress. I probably shouldn't say more, because they're probably
someone's going to listen and be like,
just writing down notes.
Sorry, that was kind of rambly, but like,
no, that was not
I like,
at all.
But you're able to articulate things good, and that's why you're on the show.
you're totally right.
I could.
No, you're absolutely right. We need to culturally isolate Israel. Yeah. We need to stop lifting it up. I mean, when people go on Birthright, they don't even mention the occupation there. I mean, that's why
they're
Birthright
like, hey,
is such a huge thing. Yeah, they're like,
float in the sea.
Like, don't pay attention to this map. Just go to the Dead Sea. Rub your face in some salt that's appropriated from the Palestinian bodies that we've paved over for generations.
And then have some Israeli hummus and tabbouleh.
Right. Israeli hummus and tabbouleh.
God, fuck
off.
Well,
I mean, it was originally from Israel, which was made thousands of years ago. so long.
Right.
Every time I see falafel or hummus or anything with the word Israeli in front of it, I'm ready to jump off a cliff.
Looking at you, Rachel Ray, you dumb bitch. How dare you?
No, there's a restaurant in Silver Lake, like a block from my house. It's an Israeli restaurant or like Jewish restaurant or whatever. It's more Israeli because everything has the word Israeli in front of it.
Oh, yeah, then it's definitely.
But it's just like, it's... You sit in front, like when it's always very crowded. I've been there one time and I'll never go back. I want to give the benefit of the doubt, but they make you sit on these like crates essentially on the side.
That's Silver Lake.
No, but it's like, am I supposed to pretend I'm like an occupied Palestine? Because that's what it feels like. I'm eating Palestinian food and like sitting on a crate. But the food.
Have you sit on crates?
Yes, I'm not kidding. It's on Sunset Boulevard. I'm not even going to say its name. People that know it are knowing, they don't want. I'm talking about, but it's appalling to see the food that my mom makes on a table in front of me with the word Israeli in front of it. It's just like, you can't claim, not only can you steal an entire country and an entire people's culture, but you're giving me the food that is precious to me and saying it is yours and everyone is believing it and loving it. And also it's gross.
Right.
Like, have you tried actual hummus?
They don't even make it right.
God, the ratio is all off. Anyway.
No, exactly. I mean, like you said, things are changing. The political consciousness is changing. You see polls have completely drastically dropped both political parties. The fact that Bernie Sanders is actually humanizing Palestinians, talking about withholding military aid, talking about the Hamas goal of withdrawing settlements in the 1967 borders. The fact that Trump has exposed this kind of fascistic relationship with Netanyahu, his, you know, Jared Kushner's involvement with the settlements, all of these things, along with the advent of social media, the fact that we're seeing these atrocities with our own eyes, and Israel can't put out just Hasbro cartoons and edit all the Wikipedia and forums online, which we know they have war rooms deployed to do on a daily basis, that's not working anymore. So you see people like Lana Del Rey dropping out of the Meteor Festival because she was embarrassed. I mean, Natalie Portman, who was the liaison for Israel, who literally was awarded like $1 million or $2 million check. And she said, I can't accept this. I am not comfortable with what Israel's doing.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's a huge PR coup for our side. And again, the fact that the rest of the world has woken up. Ireland just passed a unanimous BDS resolution. Trade unionists in Britain just passed a unanimous BDS resolution. We are waking up. Israel cannot sustain itself anymore. It is built on its own downfall, which is what Ahmed Abu Artema said. He said, and what you said about the hopefulness is important to point out too, because these people wouldn't be going to the fence every week doing what they're doing if they weren't hopeful that they were going to win. Right. And as Ahmed Abu Artema said, he said, we, even though we're weaker, we will continue our struggle until we win. And the fact that, you know, Gaza has actually one of the highest ratios of like college degrees, even though unemployment rates are so astounding, because they do have hope for their future. And one last comment about just courage, because that was my biggest takeaway from watching the footage and putting together the film, is seeing this is what courage is. It's not not being scared. It's not actually having, you know, people are like, oh, you're fearless. You know, you have courage. No, it's actually being scared shitless. That you actually know that you could fucking die. Razan told her mom, she was like, they're not going to shoot me. I'm a medic. But she would tell her colleague, Rasha, she's like, do we have to go near the fence today? Like, I don't want to go near the fence. Yeah. She was scared and she still did it anyway. And these people who go out there and throw rocks as a symbolic action, they are terrified because they know that they could get shot and they do it anyway. And that is courage. That is courage. Putting yourself in the line of fire, being terrified and still doing it. And it's something that I don't think Americans can grasp, especially, you know, just this extraordinary privilege of actually dying for a cause and for your people is something that is hard to kind of grasp. But that's what they're doing. and they're doing it, and we need to heed that call. And the least we can do is heed the call of BDS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a phenomenal note to wrap things up on. Thank you so, so much for being here and for talking to us and for making this fucking film. It is so incredibly important. I can't even put it into words. It's like required viewing for every single person, especially someone that considers themselves aware of the news and what's going on. Seriously, if you're going to support anything, support this film.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
What do you think, just because I, you know, right now the, I forget the exact, the organization, basically the top Arabs of Palestine have endorsed Benny Gantz? Gantz? I don't know. Benny?
So there's a few seats, Arab Israelis in the Knesset, like 16 or 17, who are talking about occupation and who are talking about that. And Gantz, they see as a lesser of two evils. Gantz was the former head of the IDF. He's a war criminal. He's talked about carpet bombing Palestinians. He literally is a fascist. It's kind of, it was kind of a struggle between the secular and like religious right. And again, like he didn't even get a sweeping majority. And so now we're going through this whole thing again where it's like, okay, who? It's just the never ending saga of like, and really like Arabs are absent from the conversation, but it's used to legitimize the state of Israel. Even those Arab members in the Knesset were actually temporarily banned a couple months ago. And then I think that lifted the facade a little too much. And they're like, okay, we have to give them like a couple seats to like legitimize the fact that we're a democracy. But in reality, it's just kind of dwindling and dwindling, and their voices are getting more and more marginalized. But when you look at Gantz in general, I mean, when Netanyahu announced his plan to annex the rest of the West Bank, Gantz was like, thanks for coming on board with what I've been talking about forever. Mm. And it's like, wait, you're the lesser of two evils? Like, what is going on here?
Yeah,
yeah. I've read that he's not dead.
But that's what Israelis will say. They'll say the PLO, they're like, oh, well, Abbas controls the West Bank. And they're like, and Hamas controls Gaza. So they have their own sovereignty. It's like literally under a medieval siege and a brutal military occupation. So that's like the talking points. It's like, oh, they have their own sovereignty. They can vote for whoever they want. They just need to vote themselves out of the situation. They're committing self-genocide. Just, you know, you're doing it to yourselves. It's just like, So it's important for us to kind of deconstruct that myth and make it more apparent that no, that's not what's happening at all. That's just like a Hasbro talking point.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Great. That's what I needed you to say.
I needed that. But that's why Abby's work is so important. And again, I'll link all the work that I mentioned as far as the Empire Files episodes that I shouted out in this episode in the footnotes, because what you do with the Empire Files and with your work since then is you make this really convoluted, confusing thing. Like the media wants us to be confused.
Right.
And you make it digestible and easy to understand in a way that everyone can really understand. And that's what I would hope to do with our podcast. That would like, just issues that are important enough to grasp that the media maybe wants us to not grasp completely. And I really appreciate your work for that reason. And I appreciate you putting in the effort for, because each episode probably took so much of your time. This film probably took so much of your time to put together, and all the facts and all the quotes and the history. I think it's telling, and it's work that I am proud to support. So if you're able to purchase the film, it's on video on demand on Vimeo. If you're able to, we'll link down the website so you can see if it's showing in a city near you. But you can rent it for like under $10 and you can purchase it for $20. I think
it's like $5.99. We're going to make it also. We're going to, after the screening tour, we're going to make it even cheaper. And
perfect.
Then, and then again, the streaming service with Means TV. Thank you, Shireen. Thank you, Anna, for this platform and for your work. Your podcast is awesome. It's an honor to be on, and thank you so much.
I'm melted.
GazaFightsForFreedom.com. Y'all check it out.
Wait, do you want to shout out or plug in any of your socials if you want? Where
sure.
People can find you.
Twitter at Abby Martin. You can go to abbymartin.org to check out my artwork. Mediaroots.org to check out my podcast that I do with my brother. We talk about a lot of these issues. And then, of course, Empire Files on YouTube.
Thank you again so much. And you guys, I'm not kidding. You have to... If you guys heard about the Empire Files but haven't checked it out yet, this is your fucking chance. Just be educated. You can find us at EthnicallyAmb, A-M-B on Twitter, and EthnicallyAmbig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen. I'm ShiroHero on Instagram and ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosting.
6969.
Yeah. That's my phone password. Don't say too much. I'm kidding. It's actually 0666. But anyways.
0666?
Yeah, it is.
Good to know.
But like 5 of my best friends have either 6669. I think it's, right. That might be yours.
Yep. The Mossad agent listening is like, okay, he has all our passwords now.
Kanye West is literally
0000.
Anyways.
Mine's 6669 because I did it because I thought it was funny. And then on the Kroll show, one of the characters who's like the rich dick said, because the devil loves pussy. And I was like, that's fucking hilarious.
Yes.
So now I say 6669 because the devil loves pussy.
I love that. I might have to change mine.
Guys, we're really easy to hack.
Anyways, thank you again. And until next time, stay
Abby.
Stay Abby. Which we
stay doing the work Abby stay doing.
Stay, there you go. Yeah.
Stay doing the work Abby stay doing.
What Anna said. Bye.
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 Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.